The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests, and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
The Mormon Channel presents Into All the World.
The vision will begin to be fulfilled.
Our membership is found throughout the world.
The New Zealanders, the Australians.
Sono felice di servire il Signore.
Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, Burma.
Five new temples.
Ni kupitia kwa imani.
Go into all the world.
Hello, my name is Reed Nielsen, and I'm an assistant professor of church history and doctrine at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah, where I teach on the global church. Today I'm interviewing President Ron Dunn of the Armenia Yerevan Mission. President Dunn, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Well, tell us about your mission call. President of Armenia, what was your thought?
Well, I actually knew where Armenia was. Most Americans are not too familiar with where Armenia is. And quite frankly, I was very excited when President Monson called us and told us that Armenia was where we were heading.
Did you have any previous tie to Armenia or background or understanding of Armenia?
Well, one of the folks that I worked with in Utah had done a couple of humanitarian projects in Armenia. He is an eye surgeon, and he had been over there teaching Armenian surgeons how to perform eye surgery. And so I was aware of some of the things that church was doing in Armenia.
Well, I know we have done a number of humanitarian projects, including the wonderful work of our private individual, John Huntsman, there with concrete plants and other things for the Armenians that have raised the profile of the church in remarkable ways. As far as the history of Armenia goes, as I teach the international church, this is one of the more interesting areas, I believe. It began back with the Turkish mission in 1884 when an Armenian living in Constantinople actually contacted the church office and said, hey, send some missionaries over here. We'd like to be involved. And at that point, as you're well aware, Elder Jacob Spori arrived in December 1884 and began to teach and baptize a number of members there in Armenia. 4 years later, Frederick Hines, who's often considered the father of the Armenian mission, he came over to Armenia and was able to find success as well. Now, I know that during World War I, there were some major problems in Armenia and with the church over there. We had to get some of the church members out. I know the church raised a major fund to help some of these Armenians be relocated. And President Joseph Booth, who was then president of the Turkish or the Armenian mission, he was able to help out on behalf of the First Presidency. But if you could tell us a little bit more about recent church history, how long has the church been Armenia, and what type of presence do we have there today?
The church, actually, in Armenia, had its real first presence, as you indicated, after the earthquake in 1988, when John Huntsman got involved, and he had some humanitarian missionaries that were involved in working in that cement plant and so forth. And as a result of that, the church was able to receive official recognition and was registered as an official entity shortly after that time. It was in 1991 that Elder Russell M. Nelson and Elder Dallin H. Oaks of the Quorum of the Twelve visited Armenia, and on June 24, 1991, they blessed the land and the people and dedicated Armenia for the preaching of the gospel. And it was about 8 years later, in July of 1999, that the Armenia Yerevan mission was officially created. Prior to that creation, it had been part of missions in Turkey and in Russia and even part of the Bulgarian mission. But it was 1999 when it was officially created. So this is our 10-year anniversary coming up, and we're getting ready to celebrate 10 years of the creation of the Armenia Yerevan mission.
Congratulations. What an exciting time to be in that part of the world. In fact, for our listeners,
it is. It's a great
You mentioned when you got the call, you knew where Armenia was. I think that most Latter-day Saints know that it's in the Middle East by Turkey. But tell us a little bit more about the geographic locale there. What are the bordering countries? Tell us about the culture and the people, if you would, please.
Let me just say beforehand that we actually have Armenia and Georgia are part of this mission.
Uh-huh.
And we have both countries. Armenia is neighbored by Iran, Turkey, Azerbaijan, and Georgia. So as you can see, we have some interesting neighbors. We're about 7,000 miles from Salt Lake, about 400 miles from Baghdad, and about 400 miles from Tehran. So it's a very interesting part of the world, you might say. One of the interesting things also about Armenia is that it is a Christian country. It, as a nation, embraced Christianity, and it became the national religion about 301 AD. They're very proud of that, and that's been part of the their problem historically, because their neighbors have not always been real fond of the fact that there was a Christian nation right in the middle of where there were a lot of Muslim people living.
Well, when you think of the Middle East, you don't think of Christian nations per se, do you?
And it's interesting also that Georgia followed Armenia and in 305 AD embraced Christianity as their national religion as well. So both countries that we have a long history of Christianity. And in some ways, it makes it a really interesting place to be and to do missionary work.
Now, President Dunn, you mentioned that both Georgia and Armenia are under the responsibility of the Armenian mission. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And tell us about how many missionaries there are in both countries. And, in fact, if you tell us how it's broken down by men, women, couples, junior missionaries.
Be happy to. In Armenia, we have 38 full-time missionaries. 8 of those are sisters. We have 4 couples serving in Armenia. In Georgia, we have 8 full-time young missionaries and 2 couples serving there. So you can see it's a fairly small mission, both geographically and in numbers.
And these missionaries, when they're called directly to your mission. What languages do they learn as they prepare to come over and teach the gospel?
They go to the MTC for 12 weeks, and they learn Armenian. Than those that are called to Georgia. As of last year, Georgia is being taught in the MTC for the first time.
Wow.
So they learn Georgian. Georgian and Armenian are 2 totally different languages, 2 totally different alphabets, no similarities whatsoever. Many of the people here in both countries speak Russian. Both Georgia and Armenia were a part of the Soviet Union. And in 1991, when the Soviet Union collapsed, both Georgia and Armenia withdrew from the Soviet Union, declared their independence, and became sovereign nations. So we actually have 4 languages here within this mission: English, Armenian, Georgian, and Russian. All different alphabets, all totally different languages. So it makes it very interesting and also at the same time very challenging.
And as a president, how do you get around and visit these different areas and communicate with missionaries speaking these different languages and church members?
Well, because of the diversity in the culture and languages and so forth, I use a translator almost all of the time. I studied Russian for a time in high school and Brigham Young University when I was there, but that was a long time ago and I've forgotten most of it. But I know it enough to kind of be able to find our way around, but we end up using missionaries and local Armenians and Georgians to help do the translation.
I see. Tell us about the Armenian people and the Georgian people, for that matter. What are they like? How would you describe them to listeners outside of the Middle East?
Armenia has some of the most friendly people that you would ever want to meet. We're not allowed to proselyte in Armenia. We do not knock on doors. We meet people just casually on the street and in other places where They will ask questions, and we're allowed to answer questions. They're very friendly. They're very inquisitive. They want to know about the United States. They want to learn English. They're very surprised when our young missionaries are able to speak so fluently in their language. Armenians have a great deal of pride as it relates to their Christian heritage. They think of that. They're very proud of that. They're very affected also by the genocide that you alluded to in the first part of our conversation, where during the late 1880s and early 1990s, where about 1.2 million Armenians were systematically killed, and they have a lot of pain that they feel about that. They're greatly affected by the earthquake that took place in 88, where about 50,000 Armenians were killed and some 500,000 were left homeless. So they've had a lot of adversity, and they know what it's like to have a tough time. The economy's difficult here. Unemployment is high, but the people, despite all of that, are good people and very friendly. One of the other interesting things about Armenia is that there's about a 99% literacy rate. Everybody knows how to read and knows how to write. One of the interesting things is that Mount Ararat, which is a very prominent mountain here, about 17,000 feet in elevation, is mentioned in Genesis as the place where Noah's Ark came to rest.
Right.
Ararat currently is in Turkey, but at one time, before borders were rearranged, it was in Armenia. About 95% of the Armenians are members of the Armenian Apostolic Church. Good people, friendly people, giving people, we love them. Georgia, also a great place. Christianity, as I mentioned, began there about 305 AD, and about 80% of Georgians belong to the Georgian Orthodox Church. Georgia also was part of the former Soviet Union. And Georgia has been kind of a prized geographic location due to its strategic position on the Black Sea. They have natural resources, and so their economy has been somewhat better than in Armenia. They also have about a 99% literacy rate. And Georgia has been in the news here lately. Last August, there was a war between Georgia and Russia, and incidentally, during that time, we withdrew the missionaries for a period of about 3 months, and they are back there. We love the Georgian people. They are good people. And once you get to know them, you just have to love them.
Well, it sounds like wonderful people in both countries, in Armenia and Georgia. You mentioned something that I wanted to talk about just briefly. You mentioned you're not allowed to proselyte in Armenia. Can you tell us a little bit more about why the prohibition, and is that the same in Georgia as well?
In Georgia, we have no limitations on proselyting. We can go door to door. We can stop people on the streets and talk to them about the church. Part of the charter that we have in being able to have the church recognized as an entity in Armenia talks about that we shall not be able to proselyte per se. We are allowed to answer questions. We're allowed to make arrangements with people to go to their home and teach the gospel to them there. Quite frankly, it hasn't been a problem for us. Armenians are so friendly and so inquisitive. They want to know. And the mission has been very successful in Armenia. There are about 2,500 members here in Armenia.
That's a good group.
We have two districts, 13 branches. We've had over 60 missionaries who have served from Armenia in various places.
Really?
And currently, right now, we have 15 missionaries out in various places. So the lack of being able to proselyte really hasn't hampered our efforts much at all.
I see. And are the Armenian Latter-day Saints themselves, are they involved in missionary work? Are they involved in, as members, doing proselyting?
Yes, we have a lot of members that go out with our missionaries. We have a need for Armenians to be called to serve many missions, and we have a long list of individuals who are anxious to go serve on a short-term mission. We do get a lot of referrals, and it makes it a lot easier in our finding efforts when the members do that, and then our missionaries who are master teachers can go out and teach the gospel.
And when you say many missions for the Armenian saints themselves, what exactly is that?
Well, sometimes when we have an odd number of missionaries, which happens quite often, we'll ask a young man or a young woman who are preparing to go on a mission if they have the time to go out and serve for 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 weeks with our full-time missionaries, actually live with them and serve just like a full-time missionary. And it's been wonderful. It's helped them learn the doctrines of the gospel. It's helped them understand, preach my gospel. It's helped them become better teachers. It's increased their testimonies. And it's been very effective, and a very effective way in being able to teach the Armenian people.
And it sounds like you've had a number of Armenians who have then gone on to serve full-time missions, so this is a great training ground for them as well.
It is. It's worked very well. I might say in Georgia, we just had last December our first missionary called from Georgia to serve a full-time mission. And she is currently serving in London, England, and doing a marvelous job there. I don't know that I mentioned it, but in Georgia we have two branches there and about 250 members, and they are doing well despite the fact that we had to leave them for 3 months last fall during the war. I might mention that in Armenia we've had about 300 individuals receive their temple blessings. Most of them have gone to the Swiss temple. We've had 10 Georgian members go to the temple to receive their temple blessings. And over the last few years, we've received special authorization from the 12, and 2 traveling patriarchs have come here on a couple of occasions. And as a result, we've had nearly 200 Armenian saints and around 15 Georgian saints receive their patriarchal blessings.
That's wonderful, President Dunn. Let's just explain to our listeners why you would need a traveling patriarch when you have a district and not a stake.
Well, only stakes have patriarchs, and so special authorization was given for patriarchs to be sent to this part of the world. It's interesting, both of the patriarchs have served as mission presidents in Russia, and so the blessings are given in Russian and in English. Because a patriarchal blessing needs to be given in a language that the individual understands well, only those members in Armenia and Georgia that speak Russian and understand Russian or English thus far have been able to be given their patriarchal blessings. Of course, we have a dream that someday we'll have a stake here, and then along with the stake, a patriarch would be called, and individuals here would be able to receive patriarchal blessing in their native Armenian and or Georgian language.
President Dunn, what excites me about this conversation is you really are on the ground floor of the church. Oftentimes when I speak with other stake presidents and mission presidents around the world, the church has been in many of these areas for decades, at the shortest, oftentimes 150 years or more. For instance, I was recently speaking with the president of the Rochester Mission. His mission obviously was the cradle of the Restoration. The church has been there since the late 1820s and was organized there in the areas in 1830, but it's only been 10 years for your mission, and you're there seeing the church go from nothing to having a number of districts, to members receiving patriarchal blessings, to receiving temple blessings. That must be a remarkable experience for you as a mission president.
It is a great experience. It's just unbelievable, the opportunities that we have here to get to know these wonderful people who are in many ways struggling to really understand the full meaning of and significance of the gospel. We're kind of in the Kirtland period of the church. 10 years old, we have some of the same problems that existed early on after the restoration of the gospel, and it provides some really interesting and unique opportunities for Sister Dunn and I to travel. We're in a different branch every Sunday, and very often we will take the full 2 hours after sacrament meeting and explain various gospel subjects and principles in an effort to get the people to really understand the full significance of the gospel. Our district presidents are marvelously dedicated and wonderful family men, and we're transitioning much of the responsibility and the teaching of the doctrine and the procedures over to them. And we are blessed right now to have two wonderful district presidents who understand the doctrine and is able to help us in this effort to get people to fully understand the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Well, as I study church history, both domestically and internationally, from a North American perspective, it seems that the Lord is constantly raising up specific men and women to fulfill roles in fledgling areas of the church, whether it's just it's new, it's trying to take root, it's trying to be strengthened. Can you share an experience or two of men or women in that area, perhaps a district or your counselor, that seem to have been raised up for what they're doing right now?
Two of our district presidents are just remarkable individuals. Interestingly enough, both of them were living and working in Russia when they discovered the church. They joined the church in 1994 and returned back to Armenia as members of the church and have been absolutely stalwarts since that time. And they felt that even though there were many more opportunities for work and prosperity in Russia, they felt a need, a great need, a compulsion almost, to return to their native Armenia, which they did, found wonderful, righteous spouses, and began to raise a family with the principles of the gospel of Jesus Christ. They were raised up to be here at this time to move the work forward in this part of the world. My first counselor in the mission presidency is likewise an absolutely remarkable man. He previously served as a district president. His son was the first Armenian missionary to serve a full-time mission in Armenia. And this family has made a major impact in the ability for the church to grow and to begin to flourish in this part of the world. Their testimonies are solid, they're very, very strong, and without them, this work would not be moving forward as it is.
Well, I'm sure if you were to go back to your mission 10, 20, 30 years from now, you'd be amazed by, or perhaps not amazed, you'd almost expect that these men and women that are taking these early leadership roles are going to be the future leaders of the church as stakes are created, wards are created, etc. in the future.
There's no doubt about that. And some of these young men and young women who have served missions for the church from Armenia and then have returned back here are making major contributions to leadership here in this part of the world. That's where the future is with the young single adults and the youth. And we have a strong group of kids that are growing up knowing and understanding the gospel, going on missions. And if we can keep them all in Armenia and Georgia, it will really make things move forward at a much faster rate here. Unfortunately, sometimes the call of maybe a better education or a call of maybe more financial security in the United States and other places has called to some of them, and some of them have left. But those who have stayed have made and will continue to make a lasting impact on the work here.
I know that this is a challenge faced in many parts of the world as young men and women leave their native lands as missionaries and go abroad and are exposed to some different opportunities and sort of the full program of the church elsewhere. They really do struggle to to want to go back and be pioneers in their own land and build up the church. And fortunately, many do, whereas others don't and seek for other opportunities and what have you. Do you find that your missionaries that serve abroad, do they come back? Are they satisfied with the church in Armenia? Is it a struggle for them to not have the full program of the church without a stake? How does that work?
Well, it is a little bit of a struggle. They come back and they know kind of how things should work. And when the church is just being established, things don't always work the way you would like them. And they become sometimes a little bit frustrated. And if they have an opportunity to go somewhere else, sometimes they do that. We're always a little bit disappointed by that, but those who have stayed are solid and strong and are helping us a lot. We've probably had maybe as many as half of our returned missionaries have gone elsewhere, and we're working hard to encourage them to stay here and build Zion. We have a young man that just returned recently from his mission in Ukraine. And within 1 month after returning, he was made a branch president here. And he is doing a great job. When I got here, one of the goals was to try and have all of the branches led by native Armenians. And that has happened. All of the branches now have a native Armenian at the head. In Georgia, we have a native Georgian who's serving as branch president in one of the branches, and in the other branch, we have one of our missionary couples is the branch president there, and he has a counselor who is Georgian, and our hope is that when this couple leaves, that we will then have all of our branches led, presided over by native priesthood holders.
Well, there's no question, as you look at the history of the church, that as you're suggesting, that when the native members themselves take the leadership role, and that's when the church really takes off, when you get to the second and third generation. So I really do hope and pray that you'll be able to retain those returned missionaries, and they'll be able to put down strong roots there in Armenia and help the gospel go forward. Well, President Dunn, I sure appreciate your time today. It's been fascinating to learn about the church in this far-flung part of the vineyard in Armenia. I know more about Armenia now than I did 30 minutes ago. It's wonderful to hear what's going on. As we conclude this interview today, we'd like to ask you to share your testimony with our listeners.
I would love to do that. Both Sister Dunn and I have very strong testimonies of the gospel of Jesus Christ. We have no doubt about the truthfulness of the gospel. There is no doubt about the reality of God the Father. There's no doubt about the reality of His Son Jesus Christ and the atonement. We're so grateful for that and for the sacrifices that Joseph Smith made in the Restoration, and all of those who have come before us. We're so thankful to be here in this part of the world where we're watching other pioneers grow in the gospel and begin to see the gospel take root and be able to grow here. We love the gospel. We love the people of Armenia and Georgia. We love our wonderful missionaries, and we are so grateful to be surrounded by so many wonderful people. Our testimonies were strong when we came here, and they have grown greatly over the past 2 years that we've served here. And we are so thankful to be a part of this great work.
Well, thank you, President Dunn. Please tell Sister Dunn hello from us here in Utah. And best of luck, and may the Lord's choicest blessings be on you and your missionaries there in Armenia and Georgia.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to Into All the World.